The title of today's lecture is It's Difficult for All of Us. And that's a subject which I think we can all relate to. Sometimes we have the idea that it's only us who are having problems and everybody else is doing fine. But in reality, it's all of us who are having difficulties in our own particular ways. Now, I've seen in my life that there have been series of difficulties, series of obstacles that had to be overcome one after another. I've seen also how other people have gone through similar experiences in their own way. Yesterday, we went to see a movie which was about the first championship black debating team in the United States. And during this film, there were many descriptions, displays of cruelty against colored people in the United States at that time. And it was heartbreaking to see what was going on. Now, that wasn't the most significant thing. More significantly was I started getting a clearer image of difficulties and what one should do. And I started to see that, just like in the movie, the main problem was human relationships, the way in which people dealt with each other, the way in which people disrespected each other. And what was significant about that movie was that at the end, the black team from this very small little college, for the first time ever debating such a grand institution as Harvard, were respected for what they were. They were respected for their intelligence. They were respected for what they were, the way they spoke, the way they expressed themselves. And that was very good. The reason that was very good was because actually that's all that exists. In human relationship, all that exists is the relationship between people in mutual respect. It's kind of like a respect for life, but it's even more significant. It's a respect for other people. And I look around, I see in human interactions a lot of disrespect between people. And it's interesting because disrespect is the antipathy. In other words, it is that which destroys appreciation. It's that which destroys acknowledgement of others. And where there's no acknowledgement or appreciation, there can be no love. So it's obvious that it's difficult for all of us, but exactly why it's difficult, this is what I'm going to speak about today. Let's start off by talking about the various forms of difficulty that we face. I was once speaking with somebody long ago, and they were explaining to me how everything in life boils down to health. Because if you're unhealthy, then you really can't enjoy anything. You can't really progress in anything. So health is kind of the basis of life. You know, when you got a headache, you can't really enjoy anything. If you're weak, you can't really enjoy anything or get into anything. And when, for example, old people are challenged very much in their health because systematically things are deteriorating, things are breaking down. And because of that, the capacity to enjoy life is greatly reduced on that level. So older people gradually adjust their lives so that they can accommodate their situations and still do the best they can. So one of the most important foundations is this health, this idea of having vitality, having mental vitality, having emotional vitality, having physical vitality. Now, if you think about it, this is very closely related to the spirit because the spirit is vital. It's full of energy. It's always got life. But one of the most disturbing aspects of being in a body is the lack of the capacity to express the vitality under certain circumstances. I know for me, myself, that when I'm tired, when I'm sickly, when I have not much bodily energy, and I'm forced to do things, I start to really struggle inside. I struggle and I become upset and I become full of anxiety because the capacity to act according to the demands is not there. So the vital spirit soul, full of energy, just simply emanating that energy, becomes imprisoned, jailed, or restricted by the deteriorating conditions within which it is existing. So from that point of view, it is difficult for all of us, everybody, regardless of their status or their wealth or their intellect or lack of it, shares the same problem. Everybody shares it. Everybody suffers it. It's a thread that runs through the entire existence of all living beings. Now, sometimes we think that if there's wealth, if there's some kind of position, let's say if you're famous, you don't suffer like this. If you're rich, you don't suffer like this. But we know it's not true. We've seen that it's not true. We understand that this is a universal phenomenon. What's happening nowadays, and what has also happened in the past, historically, it's cyclical, is that the environment around us is echoing that kind of a restrictive feeling, or restricted feeling. We see there is a restriction in that the health and the vitality of the economy, of the political arena, of morality, of safety and security is deteriorating. So you see the environment around, and within which we live is diseased. I mean, okay, you can say from a spiritual point of view, it's always been diseased because it's material. You could say like that. You could say that we have faced crises in the past. There's nothing unusual now. Yet I see it's an environment in which there seems to be a lack of hope, a lack of future. There's a difference there. For example, during times of crisis, there was always something that people could lose themselves in. There was always some kind of a hope. There was always some kind of a future that people could look forward to, like some kind of music to lose yourself in, or some kind of new phenomena to become wrapped up in, or some idealistic feeling to move forward to. But nowadays, that seems to be restricted. There doesn't seem to be really any direction to lose oneself in. Music is dying. That's an unfortunate fact. That one thing that kept everybody somehow or another going, it's dying. There's a fabulous documentary just came out. It's called Before Music Dies. It's about the destruction of the creativity in the music world. Politically, we all understand that things are in a very, very shaky situation, and there doesn't really seem to be a solution. Financially, if there's a little rumor or a little bad news, stock markets plunge, and then they kind of climb up again, and then another news, and they plunge again. It's kind of like people are just living their lives, but they're waiting for the doorbell, which is going to announce the end. They're thinking all the time, is this the end? Is this the end? Has the end come now? So this mood of impendingness, pending doom perhaps, or impending destruction perhaps, or impending disease perhaps, or whatever it may be, loss of wealth, this feeling that something is going on, something is happening, is making the whole environment very depressed. It's always like this when the sun reaches its lowest point for the northern hemisphere, when things reach their lowest point, when it's darkest days. It's that ending feeling that's very depressing. So we're used to this feeling this time of the year. It's something that always happens, and we kind of live through January just manifesting it, but it's different now. So the point of all this being that we are all sharing right now a very difficult time. It doesn't matter who you are, what position you have, how much money you have, what your age is. It's a very extraordinary time. And we can imagine how in our personal relationships this is manifesting. It's very difficult to feel connected, to feel, in a sense, real in this world. So I've been observing this for some time, and then now, you know, I have to speak here on Saturday, so my responsibility, I suppose, is to, okay, I analyze we have this specific kind of a problem, and then come up with some kind of a solution. I don't know if I have a solution, but I do know that a transformation of attitude is very valuable. Now, if I know it's difficult for all of us, then it's my personal responsibility to not add to others' difficulties. In other words, my discipline, as it were, my particular yogic practice, if you will, in human relationships is to avoid causing or increasing the difficulty level. Now, I know that spiritual disciplines usually speak about some kind of renunciation or some kind of meditation or chanting or all that. That's fine. But you still have to come back to deal with this world. And because this world right now is characterized by people feeling restricted on all sides and therefore feeling great difficulty personally, one has to face it regardless how much you've chanted or regardless of how much you've renounced. In the spirit of there's only one of us, when we are in a situation where it is a shared feeling of being restricted, it's our responsibility to face it, understand it, and deal with it. I remember that Chanakya Pandit said there's three things you have to deal with immediately: fire, debt, and disease. And if you don't deal with them, they devour you because they're more powerful than you are. So it's important for us to understand the power of this disease throughout all humankind right now, this feeling of being restricted, and people's desire to break out of the restriction politically or economically or health-wise or family-wise or whatever emotional problems or psychological problems they have. They want to break free from them. So they're in a constant mood of fighting, in the sense of pushing. It's a pushing against the forces which are causing us difficulty, pushing against them, pushing them back, as it were. Therefore, if there's a slight disturbance in the world, the stock market plunges as everybody pushes back by selling, protect what you've got. Anyway, you get the idea of what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this feeling within of being restricted, as if walls are pushing in on you, and you've got to push them, hold them out with your hands. This is the basic feeling that is the difficulty for all of us right now. Well, how do you deal with that? What do you do? Let's start, as I did before, with the easiest way of looking at it, the most obvious way of looking at it. The most obvious way of looking at it, as I said before, is to try to not become part of the problem. Try to not expand the problem. Just like if you see others are experiencing such difficulty, try not to add to their difficulty. In other words, don't push upon them. Hold back. Be peaceful. Relax. In other words, our responsibility as people is to understand the particular situation that everybody is sharing and not amplify it. Our responsibility as people is to control ourselves in yogic discipline. I think any form of self-control, especially a form of self-control that is so significant in its impact upon others, is yogic discipline. Let's say you're in a cave, or you're standing on your head for days, or you're controlling your breathing or not eating. These are yogic disciplines, certainly. These are austerities. These are difficult things you take upon yourself for the sake of your spiritual development. Now, okay, we understand that kind of discipline because it has been presented historically as spiritual discipline. But I'm talking about a discipline which is relevant to the pressure cooker we all live in today. The world is a pressure cooker. There's no doubt about it. I received a message just now asking, why is this happening? And although I'm sure I could give quite a good answer to that, it's not relevant. It's not relevant to the discipline. The idea of why it's happening is a complex chain of events, a complex series of our personal neglect. Neglecting ourselves, neglecting to take responsibility for ourselves, neglecting to take responsibility for the way we have thought, the way we have believed, the things we have accepted. And the fact that we did not question those fundamental things, that foundation upon which our lives stood, upon which the lives of everyone in this world stand. And because of this practically global neglect, which manifests now in global warming, the impending rise of the water, because we know the poles will be totally melted this coming summer or within a few years' summer. We have neglected the planet. We have neglected the environment. We have been reaching out for quick money. We have been reaching out for ways to make money regardless of the cost. We have not been considering sustainability. Sustainability means that it will go on continuously. We exploit people in China, for instance, who are working in horrible factory conditions for a few dollars a month. In India or China, they have child labor. Still, children working in factories. In South America, where so much food comes from, poor farmers or poor workers are being exploited by big companies because all that counts is money. People do not count. If people are a means to an end, it does not matter what happens to them. Are a means to an end. It doesn't matter what happens to them. You can go anywhere for economic interests and paint it as idealistic, as democratic. Now, this kind of global neglect on the highest levels of decision making is fed nowadays on the lowest levels of vote making. The neglect is fed by people's irresponsibility in their voting patterns. It's It's fed by people's paying for and investing in and sharing in the exploitation of other human beings. And the situation is so tense right now, it is very difficult to make an alternative statement to that and survive in this world. So that is why we are in this pressure cooker. Now, it's our responsibility as human beings to accept some discipline in our lives. And the discipline is not determined by our finances. It's not determined by our religion. It's not determined by our politics. It's determined by our capacity as human beings, as spiritual beings, to not want to contribute to the increase of the problem, to not contribute to the problem is an extremely important act of discipline. What Gandhi did, his nonviolence movement, is as relevant today as it was in India. What did Gandhi do? He said, "Don't buy English cloth. Make your own native cloth and wear that." In other words, he said, don't be part of the problem. The only reason the English are getting away with having this superior position to exploit us is because we are buying the cloth that is made with our cotton. England can't grow cotton. We Indians grow cotton. And they mill it, send it back to us, make huge profits, and then they pay us peanuts to work for them so we can buy what they give us. So he analyzed the problem. He saw the foundation of it. And he said, "I do not wish to be part of that problem. I shall not buy their clothes." And he sat there making his own cloth. Now that is an extraordinary act of discipline, because he took personal responsibility and said, "I see a problem. I don't want to be part of it." Do you understand what I'm talking about here? Each of you have a personal responsibility as your yogic discipline to understand how this pressure cooker is made and to avoid increasing the pressure on others. Now, somebody may say, "Well, that's not very spiritual." But I say, is it spiritual to increase pressure on others which harms them? I say it is not. That harming others, and I'm not talking about doing it in a beneficial way, is the basis of sinful life. If you want to talk about what is causing negative reactions, if you want to talk about whatever, bad karma, sin, whatever you want to talk about, if you want to talk about the basis of morality, it's do no harm. After all, Buddha had a good idea, nonviolence. It's a religious idea. It's a spiritual idea. It's an idea where you do not harm other persons, other animals, other creatures. You do not harm. So therefore, not being part of the problem of causing harm to others is a discipline. And sometimes being quiet is a discipline. Sometimes not speaking is better than saying the wrong thing. Sometimes just sitting back and observing is the most important thing you can do instead of reacting. Sometimes reacting to immediate things is the absolute worst thing you can do. And simply sitting back and observing and just considering how to proceed, or even if something should be done at all, is one of the most important things you can do. So the title of this lecture is "It's Difficult for All of Us." And that is not a simple lecture theme. It seems so simple. It's difficult for all of us. You could just say it. The words could just flow off your mouth and it would be another motto or platitude or just some statement. If somebody's saying how difficult it is for them, you reply, "It's difficult for all of us. Just leave me alone," or "Don't bother me." You understand? This is very, very significant, that the fact that it is difficult for all of us is very significant, because it brings about a yogic process. It gives birth to a yogic process of self-discipline based on the principle of do no harm, which is extrapolated in the principle of do not be part of the problem. Do not take part in those things which are problematic for other people. Just like we have often felt ourselves very holy because we are vegetarians. And we have challenged people that you go to the store and buy your meat nicely wrapped up in wax paper or plastic. But if you had to kill the animal, could you do it? And we felt ourselves very proud. We felt ourselves very special. But that's because we didn't really care to think very deeply about what we're doing. For example, one half of the cow slaughter industry is based on milk and milk products. So if you are supporting the purchasing and therefore the raising of cows by taking the milk product, you are directly, not indirectly, you are directly supporting the slaughter of the cow, because the cow, when it no longer gives milk, has no longer any value and is killed. And if there was no such industry, it wouldn't be so. Or it would be a lot less. So we don't consider the fundamental things that we even pride ourselves in. Just consider all of the things you support with your money. Where you take your money and what you put it in. And what you are supporting by doing that. It's a significant point. Now, what's the solution to that? Yes, I do say, and we all know, it has to change. Industries based on exploitation of laborers in faraway places that we don't know about. Mothers working 16 hours a day for 3 years without ever seeing their families and sending most of the money back to the family to support their children. And we are supporting this. How much of what we do supports war, destruction? How much of what we do supports the pain of others? I'm not saying you should do anything about it. That's up to you to figure out. That's up to me to figure out. But at least we should be aware of what it is that's behind these things that we take for granted. The pain of others. And when somebody comes up to us and speaks to us in a negative way, try to understand the difficulties that person is going through that causes them to feel that they have to speak to us or act towards us in the way they do. And consider that in yogic understanding, contemplation, in the response you make. Can you imagine the Supreme or even the Devas looking down on this planet which has created, has shared in, everyone has shared in the creation of this global pressure cooker. Of course, there have been these situations in the past, as there were kings doing it to subjects, landowners doing it to their slaves, powerful countries doing it to those who they've conquered, and so on. But due to this globalization of communication, of the easy access of satellite TV, of the internet, satellite TV, easy access, communication, telephones, the pressure cooker has become very global. And the exhaust fumes from the vehicles, from the planes, from the factories, have globally covered the planet and is affecting the whole ecosystem of the planet. And what's interesting is that these cycles of warming and cooling are global cycles. They anyway happen, but they usually happen much slower. But now we're making it happen faster. Just like when the pressure is on in the pressure cooker, the water boils much faster because there's nowhere for it to go. The steam falls back in. The pressure increases. So what should you do? Well, contemplate, observe. Observe very carefully how you feel. How you feel the pressure. How you feel what's going on. And then assume that others may have the same kind of feeling. And therefore, don't react. My mother said something the other day which was like really fantastic. When she was in school, and we're talking now about the early 1930s, one of her teachers said, act quickly and repent at leisure. Did you understand that? It's a saying. It means do something really fast, and then you've got a long time to lament about what happened. Isn't it much better to contemplate and observe, think about, plan, and then act so that you don't have to lament? Instead of the taking a long time to lament, take the long time to plan it out. Okay, it's not always possible to do that. Sometimes reality just sticks itself in your face and says, here I am, deal with me, now. How are you going to deal with that? Well, you have to. But if you have been carefully considering other parts of your life, carefully understanding yourself and observing, when you are suddenly confronted with a stress, your automatic response will more echo those carefully created responses in other aspects, and therefore you will have a greater possibility to make the proper response when you are stressed by a demand for an immediate reply. One important tip I can give from my own experience is that it's important to take seriously everything that comes to you. It's important to take seriously the challenges that come to you. It's important to take seriously the responsibilities that come to you. In other words, to deal with what's coming to us one step at a time. Doing basically one thing with our full concentration, and then completing that thing, moving to another. Because in this period, one of the worst aspects of it is that everything gets torn apart by the pressure. So we get this idea of losing track of what we're doing. And therefore, I find it personally very significant to do something from start to finish, or at least as much as I can, to move systematically, one step after the other, keeping my sights on small goals, small tasks, and completing them, and feeling that wholeness in these small tasks, that, okay, I have completed this. Now I shall move to the next. So then my life becomes a series of accomplishments. It may be a small accomplishment. It doesn't matter. It's an accomplishment. I embrace it as an accomplishment. I cleaned the kitchen. It was a mess. I look back and I say, it is clean. That is good. I like that. Next task. I shall answer all the emails in my inbox. It is done. My inbox is empty. That is good. I move to the next task. This is a tip because I have seen that in this period, people just do a little this, a little this, a little this, a little that. They don't accomplish things. They're just in a rush. They're in a hurry. They don't think. They don't contemplate. Start this thing. Push it, put it aside. Start that thing. Put it aside. That's very depressing because you never really accomplish anything. And then you have in front of you a pile of all these little unaccomplished things. And then you get depressed. And then you conclude, what's the use of my life? I can't get anything together. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. Therefore, it's even more dangerous when some people take drugs. I don't mean entertaining drugs. I mean prescription drugs to deal with that. Much better to observe the forces, observe what is happening, and deal with it one step at a time. Accept the situation. Observe it. Choose to do the most important thing first. Finish it. Do the next thing in line. Finish it. Feel good about what you've done. Pat yourself on the back. This, pat yourself on the back. Say, very good. You've done very good. It works. Believe me, it works. These kind of tips are yoga practices, disciplines, to not be thrown here and there by external forces, to not allow oneself to lose oneself, but to keep observing and acting systematically, because this is the only shelter in this very chaotic time. Okay, lower your expectations. You can't save the world. You can't save your community. Maybe you can't even save other people around you. Lower your expectations. Just get yourself together. And when you have this feeling of security, when you are confident, you can accomplish these little tasks. And only when you have the capacity, expand that to whatever capacity you have, to whatever desire you have. Because to do what you can't do is to add to the pressure cooker. It's to amplify the problem. You can only do what you can do. And first you have to know what you can do. And you have to know what you want to do. And why you want to do it. And how you feel about it. Do you feel good about what you want to do? If you don't feel good about what you want to do, then doing it is not going to make you feel good. So these points are important. And it all boils down to self-awareness, translating that self-awareness into action, observing others, observing the world, and choosing to make the next step appropriately. And it is every much a discipline for those who are spiritually aware as any other form of discipline. And I believe this will become more and more obvious to all people. They already know it somewhere, but it will be more and more obvious to all people. This is actually the meaning of personal responsibility. How to maintain your sanity when everybody else around you is losing their minds and blaming it on you.